You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. American way. Getting kind of shaky these days, it seems. There's a bunch of stuff that I'd like to talk about in this first hour. In our second hour, we're going to get into the situation with corporate taxes and Walmart in particular. And in our third hour, we're going to Arturo Carmona is going to be in the studio with us. And we're going to be talking about the whole immigration thing that President Obama is going to give his speech tonight and lay out his executive action. And the Republicans' heads are going to explode. Although it looks like what he's doing, I mean, numerically, it'll involve a larger number of people. But as a percentage of the people involved, it'll be roughly identical to what George Herbert Walker Bush did back in 1990. But in any case, we'll talk about that in our third hour in considerable detail. But in this first hour, there's a couple of things that I wanted to bring up. The first, I mentioned this yesterday briefly, but I wanted to dig into it a little deeper. Shane Farnan, our associate producer here, received an email from the Democratic Party or from Debbie Wasserman Schultz saying, you know, how are we doing? What should we do in the future? And if you were advising the Democratic Party, what would your advice be? My advice would be go to core principles. Go back, for that matter, go look at the 1956 Republican Party platform. It's kind of the Democratic Party platform these days. Strengthen unions, strengthen Social Security, you know, rebuild the nation's infrastructure. I would say go to core principles. All of these victories that have been achieved over the last century, really. I mean, there were a few that came out of the Republican Party back when there were progressives in the Republican Party, Teddy Roosevelt, William Howard Taft, 1900, but or 1901. But really, everything else has come from Democrats. The 40-hour work week, the clean air and water. Yeah, it happened on Nixon's administration, but he tried to veto it. It was Democratic Congress that pushed that through. The workplace protections. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, minimum wage, clean water, clean air. I mean, the knowing that our food is safe. The one thing where I personally think that the Democratic Party has really blown it big time, and this is where I would advise them to recalibrate, is with regard to trade. And there are some Democrats who are really good on this. I mean, you get people from the Progressive Caucus and Jan Schakowsky, Raul Grijalva, Keith Ellison. They will be the first to tell you that, our trade policies stink. I mean, I live down at the waterfront here in D.C. They're doing a $2.5 billion redevelopment down there. And I believe, I may be wrong on this, I'm not privy to the inside details, but what I've heard, you know, from people who live around me, is that some of that money is coming from China. Well, of course, all our jobs went to China. So I would advise the Democratic Party to fess up and say, you know, Bill Clinton made a big mistake. And we should have, and the party should have embraced Ross Perot, or at least Ross Perot's ideas. Bill Clinton should have said in those debates where Bill Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush both made fun of Ross Perot back in 1992. Bill Clinton should have said, you know, Ross, you're right. And he shouldn't have signed NAFTA and CAFTA, and President Obama should not be planning to sign or promoting SHAFTA, the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, they call it, TPP. Shouldn't be doing it. We need to go back to a trade policy that is, and I'm going to use this word, protectionist. Yeah, protectionist. So that's number one. I'm curious your thoughts on, you know, how would you advise the Democratic Party? And in kind of the face of that, there's an interesting piece by Charles Blow in today's New York Times, The Solid South Will Rise Again. And I mentioned this, geez, I think almost a year ago, and a couple of people jumped on me saying that I was being, not calling me a racist, but saying that I was exaggerating the importance of race, or that, you know, the Republicans wouldn't do that, or this kind of thing. And what I had said at the time, and I said it because I had heard it from a Democratic strategist who was familiar with Republican strategists, was that part of the Republican strategy, particularly in the South, was to, quote, blacken the Democratic Party. And the way that they do this is by redrawing districts. So that basically people from, you know, people in Democratic districts are going to typically be also in districts that are majority black. And so the representatives that they elect will be black. Now, nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's a fine thing. We need more people of color in Congress. But when the Republicans turn this into an election strategy, then it becomes bizarre. And frankly, I don't think it helps either race or any race. I don't think it helps anybody except the Republicans. And this is what Charles Blow, who himself is African-American, what Charles Blow pointed out. He said, according to the Census Bureau, 6 of the 10 states with the largest black alone or in combination populations in 2010 were southern states, Florida, Texas, Georgia, North Carolina, Maryland, and Virginia. And the 4 that experienced substantial growth between 2000 and 2010 in their blacks alone or in combination populations were all southern, Florida, Georgia, Texas, North Carolina. And he points out this. He says, the degree to which the South remains solidly Republican may well depend on the changing racial composition of southern states, specifically a rise in their non-white population. But he talks about the story of one of his brothers told about being transferred along with a white coworker. His brother, of course, is African-American, to Mississippi. And the white guy and the black guy were both shopping for homes at the same time, separate from each other. And the white guy was told by his real estate agent, he said, what about this neighborhood? And the real estate agent said, you don't want to live there. That's where the Democrats live, which was code for black people. I mean, that's how far it's gone. And Charles Blow, writing today in The New York Times, African-American, brilliant commentator, he says he may well have been right. Mississippi is among the most racially bifurcated states politically, with one of the highest percentage of black voters in the country. In 2012, 96% of blacks voted for Democratic presidential ticket, according to exit polling data, while 89% of whites voted for the Republican district. And then he quotes Pat Buchanan. He says, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Arkansas will not send a single white Democrat to Congress. If Mary Landrieu loses a runoff, the only Democrats in the House from the Deep South states will be African Americans. This has been part of the racial strategy, in my opinion, of the Republican Party. So I find that fascinating. And I think that if the Democratic Party wants to expand into the white population in the South, the way to do it is not with, quote, social issues. It's not pot and gay marriage. It is economics. It's raising the minimum wage. It's changing our trade policies. Our trade policies should be at the very top of the pile. Because everybody knows this in this country, right? Since Clinton signed NAFTA, we've lost, what, 60, 80, 90,000? I mean, we've lost 60,000 factories, according to Bernie Sanders, just since George Bush became president. You'd take it back, you know, another decade. It's probably 100,000 factories. So they need to run on economics.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
But what would your advice be to the Democratic Party? You've heard a little piece of mine. Also, PolitiFact says my pants are on fire. I got to tell you about this. This is a hoot. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jared, Burlington, Vermont, watching us on cable and on Free Speech TV. Hey, Jared, what's up?
Hi, Tom. The reason I'm calling, I was going to just leave with the person answering the phone just as a point of information. But she said, no, you know, get on and tell you. For measure, the president will speak on immigration this evening at 8 o'clock.
Right.
The four major networks have refused to carry it.
I know ABC, CBS, and NBC have refused to carry it. Fox, MSNBC, and CNN will be carrying it. Who is the fourth network? Is that PBS?
Fox. And I checked with them this morning.
Oh, Fox is not going to carry it live?
That's what I understand. That's what they
told
me.
Fox. Oh, you're talking about the Fox television network. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
I get it. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that.
MSNBC will carry it.
So will Fox News, and so will CNN.
Yeah.
So it'll be on cable, but anybody who's watching TV over the air or anybody who's, basically the competition for the president is going to be the primetime lineup of the three big networks.
Yes.
It's tough competition.
So your comment, what should the Democrats do? Well, I think they need to get their act together.
And how do they do that?
To let the president is doing, and to let them know about we're going back to Shafta, to let them just know what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't think John Q. Public really has any idea as to what's going on, and I think the fact that the networks are not going to carry a major speech is perhaps an indication of it. I don't know what to do.
Well, this tracks back to the death of the Fairness Doctrine. I mean, we used to have an FCC requirement that radio and television stations broadcast in the public interest, and that was understood to mean that they broadcast news. And certainly the president making one of the most consequential executive actions of the last 20 years is news. And were this pre-1987, every network would be all over this. But right now, the networks, they don't have to worry about, the FCC pulling their licenses because they're not broadcasting the public interest. All they worry about is making money for their shareholders and for their executives. And it's going to be far more profitable for them to let cable carry the news and for them to just, carry entertainment. So that's what's going to happen, and it's a sad state, a sad comment on the state of our media. I don't know if you caught my hour long conversation with Phil Donahue Tuesday night, but he and I are of a mind about that, and I think a lot of Jeff Cohen and Norman Solomon and a lot of really good observers of the media scene are really concerned about the fact that our media has just become another business, and it shouldn't be just another business. Just like our water, our electric, our sewage, our public roads, our military, none of these should be just another business. There is an element of the public good embedded in all of them, and so they I'm not calling for the news to be nationalized, but there should be an element of regulation that makes sure that our democracy can function. And for it to function, we have to have an educated electorate, to your point, Jared. Jared, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching us there in Burlington, Vermont, on Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. I'm going to get to your calls in just a moment, your suggestions for, what the Democrats should do, thank you for lighting up the board. I'm looking forward to hearing some ideas maybe that go beyond the things that I'm suggesting. I did want to share with you, though, if you go to politifact.com, politifact.com, you will find that I've been rated twice by PolitiFact. Once they said what I was saying was mostly true, and now they're saying what I said is pants on fire. And what I had said, and I've said it both on radio and on television, I was reporting on where did it come from? Anyway, I was reporting on there were several reports. One of them first appeared in the Washington Post, in fact, that the Koch brothers could make $100 billion from the tar sands that they own in Canada. And if they can get that stuff down to their refineries in the Gulf. My point was not, oh, my God, $100 billion. Although that's, you know, as Katie Sanders correctly points out in PolitiFact's takedown of my comments, that number is questionable. There's a lot of people challenging that number, and Katie actually contacted the Koch brothers and asked them, you know, she talked with the Rob Tappan at Koch Industries, a spokesman for Koch Industries, and Peter Merchland from Alberta Energy, and, you know, Koch Facts. This is, you know, a pro-Koch site in a letter that they wrote to Henry Waxman. She also quoted, you know, the Reuters and the Washington Post and some other people. But the point that I was making, and I think this point, and okay, I'll cop to it. My pants are on fire on the $100 billion. The Koch brothers may or may not make $100 billion and probably won't make $100 billion. You know, the price of oil is down. They have to pay taxes on that income, as Katie points out in the piece. Maybe they'll only make $70 billion. Maybe they'll only make $30 billion. Maybe they'll only make $1 billion. But if they made $1 billion, if they stood to make a $1 billion profit off the existence of the Keystone XL pipeline, because they own all this acreage in all the coal tar mining rights to all this acreage in Alberta, Canada. If they stand to make just $1 billion, wouldn't it be a good investment to spend a couple $100 million buying politicians in the 2014 election so that those politicians would make sure that you made your $1 billion? Forget the $100 billion, your $1 billion. And I would submit that the evidence that that's what happened was that essentially the first thing that John Boehner and the first thing that Mitch McConnell said after the results were in of the elections, that all these Republicans got elected, Democrats were defeated, Democrats who were opposed to the Keystone got defeated, whatever, you know, all this stuff. The first thing that they said was, our first order of business is going to be Keystone XL. And in fact, it was. You know, the Senate just voted on it. Hey, tell Danielle I just got a Neo Screener error. I'm rebooting the Neo Screener on my end. I think it was probably, you know, a problem on my computer. But in any case, my point is that this is a business deal. And we should not, in the United States, it's not a healthy thing for our democracy that a couple of billionaire business people can say, you know, we can make some money on this. It might not be $100 billion. It might be half that. It might be a quarter of that. It might be a tenth of that. It might be 1% of that. But we can make some money if we get politicians on board. Let's invest in politicians. I was in a taxi last night, and the cab driver said, made the comment, because where we live, they're ripping up the waterfront, and it's an enormous amount of construction. It's a $2 billion construction project. And he was like, there's construction going on all over this town. He said, I've lived here 20, 30 years. I forget how long, he said. And he said, you know, it used to be kind of a sleepy little town, and now this is a boom town. And I said, yeah, you know, the best investment you can make right now in the United States is to buy a politician. And he said, you are so right. And there's so much money coming into this town to buy these politicians. And it's true. I mean, you know, you can't go to a restaurant in this town for less than 50, 60 bucks a person just for, you know, a simple dinner and a drink. And you have to have reservations for that. So, you know, PolitiFact is probably right that I was wrong that the Kochs will make $100 billion, but they're going to make something. They're going to make something substantial, and they're going to make it if they, you know, if Keystone is approved, because they invested in the politicians who are supporting it. And that's an issue that's worth discussing. And I'm very disappointed that PolitiFact didn't point that out. They didn't even mention it. It's not even a part of the conversation. The entire thing was, is Hartman's use of $100 billion number right? And, you know, I get that. They're dealing with bumper stickers and things like that. And I was glad to see the topic up, and I'm glad that they took me seriously enough to fact check me. That said, Katie or whoever at PolitiFact might do the next one or other future ones. How about looking into this idea that billionaires and big corporations are, because the Supreme Court has legalized this, are now buying our politicians, and our politicians are no longer behaving in the interest of the public. I mean, look at every state where the, raising the minimum wage was on the ballot. It passed, I believe. I might miss one or two, but I'm pretty sure it passed every place it, it appeared. And yet politicians who openly opposed raising the minimum wage got elected. How? Because millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars were poured into political campaigns to promote those politicians and make sure that people are not talking about the fact that they're opposed to raising the minimum wage. I doubt most voters even knew it. So another thing where I would advise the Democratic Party, be clear about who you are and be clear about who the Republicans are.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And be clear about who's funding the Republican Party. It's become the party of the billionaires and the big corporations. Bad and the very, very nefandously ugly, the good. New York City. On Monday, the Big Apple announced that starting in 2015, it would turn all of the city's old payphones into Wi-Fi hotspots. The plan, which is called Link NYC, involves swapping out the old payphones for brand spanking new Wi-Fi towers that'll give anyone who walks by them free access to wireless internet. Towers will also offer free nationwide calling and serve as a cell phone charging station. You know what they say? Only in New York. The bad. Emil Michael. A new report on BuzzFeed.com claims that the Uber executive told a gathering of journalists and media bigwigs earlier this month that his company wanted to run a smear campaign against journalists critical of its practices. One of those journalists was Sarah Lacey, who's reported on Uber for Pando Daily. According to BuzzFeed, Michael said that Uber knew opposition researchers who could expose details about her personal life. Emil Michael has since apologized for these comments, but coming on the heels of accusations that Uber is a sexist and misogynistic company, they really don't look all that good. And the very, very ugly, Don Lemon. The CNN host took an interview with alleged Bill Cosby rape victim Joan Tarshis into a totally disgusting and unnecessary direction this week. Check it out.
Right. You said he made you perform oral sex.
Right.
You know, there are ways not to perform oral sex if you want to do it.
I was kind of stoned at the time, and quite honestly, that didn't even enter my mind.
Yeah.
Now I wish it would have.
Right.
But
meaning the using of the teeth,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yes, that's what I'm
as
thinking.
A weapon,
you're, yeah, I didn't even think of it.
Biting. So,
ouch.
Yes. I had to ask.
It didn't cross my mind.
No, you really didn't need to ask, Don. And next time you talk to a potential rape victim about the night of her attack, try not to sound like you're blaming her for not fighting back. That is very, very ugly. Okay. What should we say? What's your message to the Democratic Party? Since they're asking, you know, for your advice. Dan in Tell City, Indiana. Hey, Dan, what's up?
I was going to respond to your talking point about what the platform should be for the Democrats, and I think that in response to, since our government is set up as a compromise, that we should, for example, if we want to raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, in negotiations, I'm not going to start at $10.10 an hour. I'm going to start at $12.10 or $12.50 or something, and hope to settle for the $10.10.
So Democrats should start talking about a $15 minimum wage.
Yeah, whatever.
And settle for $10.10
somewhere. You don't start where you at what your goal is.
Yeah, I agree. I would take it even a step beyond that and say they need to start talking about the minimum wage. I mean, you've got all these Democratic politicians, many of them who just lost their elections because they didn't talk about the minimum wage because they were trying to get the low information or middle of the road or Fox watching viewers or whatever, and I think that that's just a huge mistake. Dan, thank you for the call. Larry in Del Mar, Delaware. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind today?
A couple things, Tom. My advice to the Democrats would be, and I appreciate Dan's comments just ahead of me, would be to start with a progressive contract with America.
Mm-hmm.
Basically make it a basic catechism. If you want to call yourself a Democrat, if you want to be supported by the Democratic Party as far as funding is concerned, here are just a few points to adhere to. And I've got a 10-10 national minimum wage. I understand what Dan said. I understand what you said. Start it at $12.50 and then settle for what you have to settle, but at least make it comparable to what people would have been making had it been indexed to inflation since 1968.
Right.
The second point would be a national infrastructure improvement bill, which the states could easily generate as far as infrastructure projects, rail, highways, water sewer systems, et cetera.
Yep.
And then the third point would be a national strategy for renewable energy. There's other things to talk about, campaign finance reform, foreign policy, et cetera, but I think coming off of what we just came off of, how about we just start with a core and everybody get behind the core and pull the rope in the same direction?
Yeah, I think that makes great sense. Larry, thank you for sharing your suggestions. Ronnie in Jefferson, Wisconsin. Hey, Ronnie.
Hi. I think the Democrats need to address climate change. And also I'm calling because I think I can vindicate you on that PolitiFact rating.
Oh, really?
My town is sitting on the world's largest tar sands oil pipeline. It is not the Keystone. It is Enbridge, Line 61. It's 42 inches in diameter, a foot bigger than the KXL. It's a foreign-owned pipeline company, and it's transporting foreign oil. And it spans from Superior to Delavan. And at this point in time, it's carrying roughly 400,000, and they want to expand it to 1.2 million barrels per day.
Whoa.
So, yes. And it's in a corridor with four additional pipelines. The two pipelines that are in there now are running 990,000 barrels per day. And
wow.
On top of that, they want.
Where is this oil coming from, and where is it going to, and who owns it?
It is coming. It's coming from the Alberta tar sands.
Right.
I don't know exactly which companies, and it's traveling through the Enbridge pipeline system.
Right. And where is it being refined?
This is headed for Chicago. For the refineries there.
Well, that's interesting because the Koch brothers own a refinery in Chicago. They've got this huge pile of pet coke or waste product. That's blowing dust into minority neighborhoods in Chicago.
I believe the Whiting, is that the one near Whiting?
Could be. I don't remember the name.
Right.
So sorry.
Well, and this will go through several refineries on its way down. My town is dealing with, like I said, all this oil. And in addition, there is a 20-inch diluent pipe, which contains hydrogen sulfide gas and benzene.
Whoa.
Yes, and what's really sad about this is that it was approved in 2006 with what we call an environmental light study. It was an environmental assessment done on the impact of the construction of the line, not on what the line would contain and not on what the operations of that pipeline. We've been asking for a full environmental impact study to be done, and we're hoping that we're able to do this. They're using that environmental light study to try to put in additional pumping stations so that they can up the PSI, the pounds per square inch, in the pipeline to make it suitable to carry this dilbit, this bitumen.
Right.
Because right now they don't have enough pumping power.
Right.
The only thing in the way of this line going operational to 1.2 million barrels per day is a conditional use permit that would have to be issued by Dane County for them to build a pumping station. What they call it in the town of Waterloo, it's actually it's actually closer to Marshall. It's in Dane County.
Right.
So that is what we're dealing with right here.
Amazing. Amazing. Ronnie, thanks for the info and the heads up on that, and for your suggestion for the Democratic Party, and for calling and for listening to the mic. Steve in Rockford, Illinois. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, how are you, Tom?
Great.
Good.
You are too.
I think, first of all, when given the results of this last election, that the Democrats should start running better candidates. They also need to make sure that whoever is managing these candidates and running their elections can keep them from self-imploding, like Udall out in Colorado. He talked nothing about this, nothing except the war on women.
Well, really? That's not literally true. It's although apparently most of his ads were about that. Yes.
Well,
but he did talk about other things.
But so he wasn't actually doing battle with the person that he was running with, who countered what he was doing and much more effectively. He needed to talk about the ACA. He needed to talk about the minimum wage. He needed to talk about all of the things that, as you said earlier in the program, have pulled very, very well with the people across partisan lines.
Right.
Braley in Iowa talking about who is going to run the Judiciary Committee, insulting farmers. Small little mistakes like that can make the difference in a campaign, because when it comes right down to it, people can talk about a platform and they can talk about programs. People go into the booth, they vote for a candidate that they have a good feeling about. Yeah. We need to start running better candidates. For example, Clinton in 2008, she had Mark Penn running her campaign. Not good. They didn't understand the caucus process. They lost that. Clinton went on to win essentially more delegates in virtually all the large states. Had she run a better campaign, she most likely would have won and been president. So if we're looking at 2016 in terms of advising Democrats, we need to advise them, put the best candidates out there, make sure that the people that are running their campaigns are astute enough to not get into this muck.
And stand for what you stand for, and stand for it proudly. I mean, this is the message of the governor, you know, Dan Malloy of Connecticut. You know, he said, come on, Democrats, grow up here.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's time for the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party to assert itself. The Hell No Caucus. As it's referred to over at America USA. And welcome back, 15 minutes before the hour. And John, watching Free Speech TV in Minneapolis. Hey, John.
Yeah, I wanted to, you know, just really repeat what you had just said. I think that, you know, they should take the progressive caucus and their values, which I think appeal to ordinary people, because they're basic values like the minimum wage, health care, things that ordinary people need, and they should go with that and stick with it. And I think it does work. And I know Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat, but he's an independent and caucuses with them. But what's so appealing about him is that he sticks with his values. He expresses those values well, and he communicates those to people. And unfortunately, you know, the Democratic Party has aligned itself with, I think, corporate America, and, you know, in some ways has sold us, you know, down the river as far as, you know, those values. It's like we get whatever is left over after it's all cut up and decided upon, and here we throw a bone out. I mean, I supported Barack Obama in 2008, and I know a lot of other people here in Minnesota supported him because this person was vibrant. Wow, look at this guy. He really wants a change. You know, that was his theme. You know, we want a change. And when I mean a change, I meant a change. I wanted a change from the very right-wing Republican policies, two wars, corporate America first, you know, just shut up and we'll take everything from you kind of attitude. And I was really sick of that, and so were a lot of other people. And I still support the Democratic Party, and I still support Obama, but I would like him to be more democratic in my opinion, which would be a progressive Democrat. I've always been a progressive Democrat, and I think you can win with those issues. Look at in Seattle, Sharma Sawant, who is not a Democrat, was a socialist, won on the issue of $15 an hour. And actually, if we're looking at having a minimum wage that really works for people, it would be more like $20 an hour that would keep up with what the minimum wage was in the 1960s. Mm. Anyway, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, no, I think very well said. Thank you very much. Anita in San Antonio, Texas, watching Free Speech TV. We have a minute to the break, Anita. Quick one.
Hi, Tom. I think we need to take a page out of the Republican playbook and use fear. I think, especially about climate change, I think we need to be honest and about what's really going on. And we should, that's something we should fear.
Mm. In other words, start talking about extinction.
Exactly.
Start talking about,
I mean,
not just...
Fear motivates people.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but and it's something we should be afraid of.
Yeah, yeah. Or very concerned about. I don't disagree. I'm not a big fan of using fear, but you're absolutely right. People, there's the carrot and there's the stick. And,
right.
And the Democrats should be using both. That's, you know, any good communication strategy or motivation strategy contains both moving toward pleasure, moving away from pain, both the carrot and the stick. And excellent point, Anita. Thank you for calling and making it. We'll be back. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Miles in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Miles, you had some thoughts about what the Democratic Party should be saying?
Yes, that's right, Tom. I'm speaking with someone on the right. The Democrats and Republicans obviously don't have a populist side. Of course, the Republicans have somewhat of one. But if you look at the 92 election, you see how much there is that out there in the form of global trade. What the Democrats need to talk about, instead of free trade, they need to talk about trade reciprocity. We simply don't have that with other countries. They benefit from our buying power, basically, and that destroys our local wages here. Secondly, they need to talk about, there simply needs to be a broken windows theory toward financial crimes. Mm. They don't have that. Nobody is enforcing that. They need to go with the agenda of no more settlements. We will hold them accountable. Things like that will actually attract people on the right. We want things like that that simply is not being taken care of. And then third, they need to speak to the message of the economic forces of globalization, how much it's affected America, how these benefits other countries, and how it really is harming the people locally, and which it does. And on speaking about immigration, on that point of view, I mean, for good or bad, it doesn't matter your view, but since 1980, we've imported 29 million legal immigrants. And that force, for good or bad, is going to drop the wage salaries of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. It affects everybody when you import large amounts of workers. It simply does.
Yeah.
And those things need to be talked about. And we need to have a debate. But since 92, we haven't had that. Both parties have shifted away from that. They no longer talk about those things. They got those things passed, and they're pushing on to these other things.
So you're saying, let me get this right, Miles. You're saying these things as a conservative. Yeah, as a
That's
conservative,
right.
You would vote for a Democrat if they took these positions?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I know these on the right, they'll talk about them, right? But they won't do it. And,
yeah.
And that's always the case. And both parties rely on that. They rely on that vote from both parties. And then when they're in there, I call this the cynical caucus, right?
Yeah.
They're cynical, but get it done. You see what I'm saying, Tom? But
yep.
Anyway, I enjoy yourself.
Yeah. Thank you, Miles. Thanks for your observations. I think you're spot on. Corey in Seattle. Hey, Corey. What do you think the Democrats should do?
Hey, you know, I really think they should take the approach that Bernie Sanders is taking, and I'll echo a few things that callers have said. He's a guy who really just stands with his values, and I think that the Democratic Party has gotten so far away from their values that it's just it really makes me not want to call myself a Democrat more. You know, like, we have all those Democrats that voted for the Keystone Pipeline. That should be political suicide for a Democrat, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Don't you agree? I mean,
I do agree, and there's actually I had an interesting conversation yesterday, an off-the-record conversation. I'm not going to name the person, but with somebody who's wired into the political strategist circles in this town, and he said that there is a theory that a number of Democratic strategists believe may well be true, that the reason Harry Reid allowed the vote on Keystone and the reason the White House didn't lobby for it to win, but instead, if they lobbied at all, lobbied for it to lose, but, you know, let it go down in flames, was to out the conservatives, that there's a war inside the Democratic Party, that Harry Reid's a hell of a lot more progressive than most people realize, and that as a minority leader, he's going to start being very populist and progressive. He's going to let his inner Harry Reid out, and that this was the beginning of that. This was the beginning of the declaration of war, basically, within the Democratic Party on Democrats who don't behave like Democrats. And I can't tell you if it's true or not, but I can tell you that I'm talking about some of the really serious high level political consultants in this town who consult with or advise or run campaigns for big name Democrats that you would immediately recognize. In fact, you'd recognize the names of these people are saying this.
Yeah, well, we need to do it from the top down. We need to do it from the bottom up.
As yep.
Voters by not, you know, by standing up and voting for people like Bernie Sanders. I wanted to take a second and say that I've never been involved in a political campaign. I voted for Obama in 08, but then I didn't want to vote for him the second time because I thought he was a conservative. But Bernie Sanders has single-handedly fired me up so much about politics lately. I started listening to him on your show this summer. I've been watching the interviews with him this week. If he announces his presidency, even before he announces it, I will pledge support, my time, my money. I don't have a lot. I work 40 hours a week. You know, I'm paying off student debts. But he's got me so fired up that, you know, I will spend so much time and money campaigning for this guy because I really do think he's the face that we need to be embracing as the Democratic Party.
That's absolutely great. Thank you, Corey. Thanks for the call. Rick in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hey, how are you today?
Good.
I would like a Democrat who's got a sack. I want somebody who's going to stand up with some steel in this fight. Quit calling the Republican Party my friend from the other side of the aisle. No, you need to call them the enemy, your opponent, the opposition, or something like that. You know, the Republicans learned a long time ago that language is everything. How you phrase something, how you paint a picture with language. The Democrats have not gotten a hold of that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the Republicans yesterday, they called Obama an emperor. They called him a king. They called him a power grabber. I mean, they were using all these very pejorative adjectives to describe the president of the United States, which in and of itself is not just disrespectful, but bad politics. But at that, the Democrats get up and they say, well, my esteemed friend and the Democrat Republic, Harry Truman used to call them, these do nothing Republicans. Right. I mean, that wasn't even it wasn't a curse. And it wasn't an allegation that they're doing something that they're not doing. Like, you know, right now where the Republicans are saying Obama is, you know, unconstitutionally seizing power, acting like an emperor, acting like a czar. That's nonsense and it's hyperbole. But if the Democrats were to call the Republicans do nothing Republicans, it would be true. Or obstructionist Republicans. So I'm totally with you, Rick. I think you said it very, very well. Thank you for the call. Thanks for listening to us in St. Louis. We will be back. We're going to get into this fascinating. Frank Plante is going to be with us, the executive director of Americans for Tax Fairness. What Walmart is up to, and it's not just Walmart, what corporate America is up to. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and so pleased to have Frank Clemente in the office with me. I'm saying it right now, aren't I?
Yes, Clemente.
Yep. Frank Clemente, the Executive Director of Americans for Tax Fairness, Americans for, F-O-R, taxfairness.org is the website. And you guys have just come out with this amazing report. The focus is Walmart, but I think this is meta to a much larger issue. But let's begin at the beginning. Tell us about the report.
Yeah.
Tell us about Americans for Tax Fairness first.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for letting me be here. We're a coalition of 425 national and state organizations working to ensure we have a progressive tax system. We are focused a lot on corporate taxes, corporate tax abuse, corporate tax avoidance, but also we want the wealthy to pay their fair share of taxes as well.
Yeah, a fine idea. And the wealthy are very opposed to that.
I like to say we've had 35 years of sort of, Republican hegemony on the tax issue,
yeah.
Right, where basically the sense has been that you have to have a smaller government and you have to reduce taxes. What's interesting, we've done a lot of polling over the last 2-3 years, and the American people, their agenda is they want corporations and the rich to pay their fair share. They know that they are getting screwed by the system, the people are,
right.
And that the corporations and wealthy folks are getting away with murder because of the loopholes that are out there.
Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely true, and it's a crime. So to the point of that, what's Walmart up to?
Well, so we wanted to focus on Walmart, which is the biggest corporation in America, and show how much they get away with in terms of tax loopholes. And what we found is there's some three top line numbers, right? Right now, they're saving $1 billion a year through tax loopholes off what the top tax rate is, $1 billion a year.
What kind of tax loopholes do they use?
Mostly accelerated depreciation. It's a freebie that corporations got inserted into the tax code years ago and haven't been able to get rid of it. It basically, the amount of time that it takes to wear out plant and equipment, they're able to take it on an accelerated basis. So it's a lot quicker. They can deduct the cost of it a lot quicker than the actual plant and equipment wears out.
Right.
They also are leading a charge to reduce corporate tax rates. The current statutory tax rate, that's the rate in law, is 35%. They want to bring it down to 25%. So that's a very substantial cut in taxes. We examined how much would they cut their tax bill if they did that, and that would add another $700 million a year in tax breaks.
Wow.
And then the other thing that we found is that they have $21 billion that's sitting offshore. These are profits that have been generated offshore, but they've not brought them back to America. And the reason they haven't brought them back to America is you don't have to pay taxes on those profits until they're returned to America. And so they're kind of waiting around. They're hoping that Congress will pass a tax bill that will basically give them a free pass on
Congress has profits. Done this before.
They did it. They did it back in 2004. It was called a repatriation tax holiday. What that means is companies repatriate. They bring the money that's offshore. They bring it back here to America. They paid a 5% tax rate on that money back in 2004.
And we were told that when they repatriated that money, that it was going to create an explosion in jobs, because when all this money came back into the United States, they would use it to invest in factories and facilities, And instead what happened was they increased their dividends and their CEOs took giant bonuses.
And they, that's right, and they also did stock buybacks.
Yeah, a lot of stock buybacks.
To inflate the value of their stock,
right,
which came back to the executives as well, since a lot of their compensation is in the form of stocks,
right,
stock options. So that's right. It was a total boondoggle. Everybody recognizes that as a total boondoggle. $300 billion came back, and not one job was created from it. In fact, the Congressional Research Service did a study of this and found that most of the companies, the biggest companies that brought the most money back, actually cut their workforces in the years right afterwards.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a total scam. And they know that. Congress knows that, too. And yet companies are still up here trying to work a deal on it. They think, they know they can't get a freestanding bill like that passed anymore because of how bad it was the first time. They want to have it be part of overall corporate tax reform and try and sneak it through.
So how do we message this? How do we communicate this? Let me back up a little bit. Walmart, the things you just identified are like the clear off the top federal tax stuff. Walmart is also profiting from going into communities and saying, give us free land, mm-hmm, give us free utilities, give us tax abatements for 5 or 10 or 15 years, and we'll hire 200 people. And so they're getting, and I don't, have you guys quantified the
across
amount
of the money? Country? We haven't. Good Jobs First has done that. Mm-hmm. I think it's something like $80 million of facility, but I'm not sure if it's that much.
In goodies. And then, and then on top of that, they've got a business model where they pay people a low enough wage that those people qualify for food stamps and for housing support and for Medicaid. And so we're picking up the bill for their employees. So, you know, my understanding is we're subsidizing just on that level. We're subsidizing every Walmart in the country to the tune of roughly $1 million a year.
Yeah, well, we did a study on this, actually. Put it out on tax day. It's called, go to our website. It's called Walmart on Tax Day. Mm-hmm. And we looked at how, tried to do an estimate as to how much overall American taxpayers are subsidizing the low wages and the meager benefits that Walmart employees get. Remember, most of them are making just above the minimum wage, which when they've got a family, it, for a lot of folks, it qualifies them for Medicaid, as you said, for the earned income tax credit, which is a tax credit they get for low wages, for child care and things like that, food stamps. And we found that it's a $6 billion a year tab that's on the taxpayer.
$6 billion
a year. That's correct. So
distributed over how many stores in North America? Do we know?
2,000 sticks in my mind, but I don't. I don't want to go to the.
So
bank
it's more than $1 million a store.
I can't remember that we did a breakdown per store, but it's a phenomenal amount of money. And this isn't just Walmart. I mean, all the fast food industry, all these.
This is a business model.
It's a business model. All these right now. Look at as taxpayers. We need to help people who are at a minimum wage and just above a minimum wage. We've got so it's sort of hard to say, well, they shouldn't get these benefits. That's not what we're saying. What we need to say is these companies should be paying a livable wage so that these folks aren't going to need these benefits from taxes.
Well, this is what FDR said. He said the best welfare program is a good job.
Right.
That's right. Yeah, this is common sense stuff. And so Republicans right now are aggressively talking about we need to reform the tax code.
Right.
And you and I both know what that means. They want more Reaganomics.
They've said
it's a 35-year experiment that has totally failed and destroyed the American middle class. The Republicans want, as Sam Brownback did in Kansas, they want to double down on this. How do we message what should somebody say when they call their member of Congress, particularly the Democratic member of Congress, and say, yes, we want tax reform, but let's not just run into this thing the way that the Republicans are talking.
Well, and I want to say, you said it, Democratic members of Congress, right? We're not going to win this battle with the Republicans, but we have a problem on the Democratic side of this issue as well. Mm-hmm. There are not enough Democrats that are willing to stand up and say corporations, and this is how you message it, right? Corporations and wealthy Americans ought to be paying their fair share of taxes.
Right.
Fair share of taxes is a winning message. It wins with the public at large. It is outrageous that you have companies – General Electric, a company that had $28 billion in profits over the last 5 years. You know how much they paid in taxes?
Nothing.
They got $3 billion in refunds.
Wow.
Okay? Over a five-year period, they got you, me, most of your listeners out there, single family, paid more in taxes in 1 year than General Electric paid over 5 years. This is one of the biggest corporations in America. It's a corporation that has, makes billions of dollars in profits every year and is paying nothing in taxes. How outrageous is that? That's all you need to say in the public that's going to be like that.
Yeah, amazing. Frank Clemente with Americans for Tax Fairness, F-O-R, Americans for Tax Fairness.org. Frank, keep up the great work. Thanks for dropping by. Great to see you. We'll be right back. Stick around. 15 minutes past.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Once again, check out the website, Americans for F-O-R, Americans for Tax Fairness.org. We'll be back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 15 minutes past the hour. And I know that many of you still have suggestions for the Democratic Party. Roy in Corpus Christi, Texas, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Roy, what's on your mind today?
Well, I first heard about this app on your show, actually, called Greenhouse. And when I look at politicians now, that's the first thing I do is look at where their money's coming from and how much of it. By example, if I look at my buddy Mitch McConnell, I see that his third biggest supporter is oil and gas industry at $917,000 for this year.
Whoa.
And I also look at how much of that is small donations, under $200, and it's 4%. Now, I contrast that with Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
Oil and gas doesn't appear anywhere. And 59.1% of his donations come in at $200 or less.
Wow.
So when I'm looking at candidates, that application, which you can download rather easily, I think it's allaregreen.us is the webpage to download it. Very, very helpful for looking at least at the federal.
So if I go into the App Store and I plug in the word greenhouse, it'll pop up?
Yeah, if you just query greenhouse, you have to look through a bunch of stuff about greenhouses.
Yeah.
But then you'll eventually get to the greenhouse.
Or maybe
app.
Greenhouse in politics or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Thank you very much for that, Roy. And
quite welcome.
Appreciate the information. Good talking with you. Jesse in Miami, Florida. Hey, Jesse, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Hey, I would tell the Democrats or any decent politician that they need to take their private money and invest in the people who start moving their money for credit unions and people in Occupy movement who strike debt and Occupy card. I tell them put their private money into this movement where they could form some kind of Occupy Incorporated.
Mm.
This way they could get around the obstruction in Congress, the government. And just like the president's trying to get around them with executive action.
Yeah.
So if you have a private corporation, we could get away from the greed that caused 9/11 and why they hate us and why they're throwing acid in girls' faces. This greed, they hate us. Freedom, democracy, they love us. But the greed is overpowering the other. But if we, Congress, would start using private money from their salaries, start a corporation, the little people could see this and understand it and say, okay, we got leverage to deal with these.
Well, what you're describing, Jesse, is sort of what the billionaires and the Koch brothers have done on the right, on the Republican side, is, you know, they've promoted movement politics, the Tea Party. And you're suggesting we should use movement politics rather than party politics, if I'm understanding correctly what you're saying.
Use money as a vote.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Warren says the rich people got the money, the little people got the vote.
Yep.
But that vote means nothing if it could be brought. But if our money, we use our money as a vote in a corporation, incorporate ourselves, we got leverage. We could form a bank. We could fund a cooperative.
Lots of possibilities.
You know, it really got me pissed off watching RT News. Our country... they made a claim in Africa.
Yeah. Jesse, I'm sorry. We're out of time. Thanks for the call. Yeah. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And I think this is, you know, the thing that Frank Clementi said that I thought was most fascinating is that when Americans are polled, one of the top issues that would cause them to vote for, say, a Democrat is that that person is saying we need tax fairness in this country. We absolutely need tax fairness. And we do. You know, this is like, we do. Anyway, Tom in North Hollywood, California. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Good.
I am calling because of the fact that I think what we need to do is, one, you know how big I am on the message.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you said, tax fairness. Okay, well, let's use that as our buzzword for today. And let's start saying tax fairness every single day. Let's have every Democrat singing from the same playbook. And let's have the right wing repeat our talking points. So therefore, it gets into the mainstream media. And then you're starting to develop a actual message around your party, rather, because that's what the Republicans do. They don't just start it 3 months before an election. They do it every single day on the radio, on TV, on everything that they do. They make it simple. They lie, of course, about it, and they're usually talking in a progressive way. But John Boehner, where are the jobs? Well, how many people have repeated that, whether it's a progressive or whether it's a, but they already, how many times has that been repeated over and over again where it's in people's brains that that's the Republican mantra?
Yeah.
So we need to not get fancy with our wording. We need to draw the picture in our head, and we need to talk in pictures and keep it very simple, because in a world of Citizens United, where all it is money, money, and more money, and commercials and sound bites, we need to make sure that we're saying a message, like you said, tax fairness.
Yeah.
You know, whatever the different things are, we have to keep it simple. We have to keep it repeated.
Here's the one area, and Tom, are you Tom with the Yellow Pages?
Yep, the Gay and Lesbian
Yellow Pages. It's a great publication. Let me just give it a plug here.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for that. And thanks for putting an ad for our show in there. The one problem that Democrats have or progressives have that Republicans don't have is that Republicans have this giant echo machine. You know, it starts on Limbaugh's show or something like that. It migrates to Fox News. It goes from Fox News over to Drudge. It goes from Drudge into the Washington Post and the New York Times. It goes from there into the mainstream media. And the Republicans are able, you know, like this thing with Gruber, you know, for example. Fox News has talked about this over 700 times now in the last week. And it's starting to get some, you know, some traction. And Benghazi, they have the ability to drive something up. The closest we have to that, and if you think back to last year, Rachel Maddow did this with Chris Christie and Bridgegate. She pounded on that thing day after day after day after day, to the point where a lot of her listeners were starting to say enough already. But it migrated from her show into, you know, got all over the progressive websites, but ultimately into the mainstream media. People started actually asking Chris Christie questions. But that's a pale shadow compared to the power that the right wing has with their echo chamber. And so that means that because we don't have that massive media infrastructure, we're not, you know, progressive radio is not heard in every town in America like conservative radio is. And there's no real progressive television network. MSNBC has a couple of hours of progressive programming every day. But you know, their biggest show is a conservative in the morning. And in fact, their most profitable show is a prison reality show. So because we don't have that infrastructure, that's why I'm suggesting that Democrats just should go back to core principles. They should go back to, you know, let's recite what FDR said, what Harry Truman said, what Lyndon Johnson said, what Jack Kennedy said. You know, here is where we stand. These are our core principles. Am I making sense, Tom?
Absolutely, and I totally agree with you. But my point is that when I see a progressive get on, whether it is MSNBC or whether it is any other show, I mean, we're very cerebral, and that's progressives in general, and that's why that doesn't seem to work in the Citizens United world, because of the fact that even if I get a progressive and they just gave me, you know, they asked them a question, and then after the question, they answered it, I can't repeat back what it was that they said. But I can repeat back what a Republican says, because they just say, oh, government takeover of health care.
Right.
When the government is we the people, so you're basically saying we the people take over of health care. We should be saying corporate takeover of health care.
Yep.
I mean, Bernie has been doing such an awesome job by getting his two or three points. Bill Clinton did such a great job with his 4 points all the time.
Yep.
Where it just hammered and hammered and hammered it to the point where people could recite it. And
yeah.
I don't think that a lot of people that are in Congress that get on these TV shows, they try to be fancy about it.
I know. They need, well, and hurting Democrats is like hurting cats. Tom, quickly, what's the website for your directory?
Gayandlesbianpages.com.
Gayandlesbianpages.com. Thanks a lot. Tom Adler, great talking with you, Tom. Thank you very much for calling. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
28 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more. Seven of the 30 largest corporations in America, Travis Geddes writes over at rawstory.com, seven of the 30 largest U.S. corporations paid their CEOs more last year than they paid in federal income taxes. Can you imagine? We're not talking about, you know, some little mom and pop store. We're not talking about, you know, the corner convenience store or the local dry cleaner where it's, you know, family run business and they're just kind of squeaking by. We're talking about the 30 largest companies in America. Seven of them paid their CEOs more than they paid in taxes. And every single one of these corporations is as large as they are and as profitable as they are and as prosperous as they are because of us. Because of our infrastructure, because of our schools and our roads and because we made it because of a stable banking system, a stable court system. You know, the heaviest users of our courts are businesses, corporations. Who pays for them? You and me. Because corporations aren't paying the taxes. Back during the Eisenhower administration, about a third, 32, it was either 32 or 35% of total federal revenues were corporate income tax. That was when Dwight Eisenhower was president. Then came Reaganomics, and now it's about 10%. And some years it's even below that. 10% of total federal revenues are corporate income taxes. It's obscene. And it's such a great message. Frank Clemente, get over to AmericansForTaxFairness.org and check it out. You will see this amazing report. Walmart, in 2013, its revenues were $473 billion. It only declared $16 billion in profits. And then, you know, on top of that, we subsidize them to the tune of $6.2 billion annually in food stamps, Medicare, and other anti-poverty benefits. Plus, Walmart has $21 billion parked offshore to avoid paying taxes on it. They have 74 lobbyists in Washington, D.C. They spent $32 million bucks last year lobbying in the last 5 years. 74 lobbyists. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Howard in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Howard, what's on your mind?
Hey, so I'm going to have to disagree with you and all of your callers.
Okay.
I think we're missing the whole point, and I can prove it.
Okay. Go for it.
What percentage of voters turned out?
It was a little over 30%.
Meaning the Republicans got about 16% of the vote.
That's correct.
With the great...
And let me, if I may add to that, Howard... That was 30% of registered voters who turned out, and only about half of Americans who are eligible to vote are registered to vote. So that 16% becomes 8% of Americans who would be eligible to register to vote and or vote.
reinforcing my point all that much more.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking about the message that Democrats should put out. Well, where do you get a better message machine than Rush Limbaugh, Sean Propagandity, Glumbeck, and Bill O'Reilly? And Rents Priebus, Frank Luntz, Karl Rove, and go down the list. Their great message machine got 80% of the vote. So my contention is it's not the message. And I'm going to tell you how you get the vote out. I've been trying to do this for 4 years now. Nobody will listen. You very simply need a block captain system, which is a very simple thing to put together, starting with area leaders to precinct leaders. You can get block lists of Democrats, and every block has a Democratic block leader, and you embarrass the people out the vote.
Yeah. This is how politics were done in a big way in the United States in the first half of the 20th century.
Well, I mean, that's what it's about. If we got, forget all the messaging, if we got 50% of the vote out, we'd have probably swept the election.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it. Now, here's the hit on what you're talking about, and it, you know, it's the Tammany Hall thing. And Tammany Hall was not unique. This was being replicated all over the country. And that is that you get a bunch of these block captains and you create basically a local political machine, and the political machine itself then becomes self-perpetuating, becomes an in-club, becomes corrupt essentially, and now you got a problem. So how do you prevent that from happening?
Well, you know, I don't see it that way, Tom, because this is going to be a spread out thing. If you picture a person on every block, this isn't going to become a club. It's going to become good people that are willing to volunteer and motivated to do what they have to do to get the lazy people out to vote.
Right.
And so I don't think that's a problem.
Yeah.
I really don't.
You know, a variation on what you're talking about, Howard, and I talked about this at some length last week, is, you know, and in fact, Shane got a piece of mail on this, is the thing that was discovered in 2006 by a couple of political scientists in Michigan, that it was 100 times more effective at something massively more effective at getting people out to vote than any other kind of direct mail piece. It was a direct mail piece that showed who in their neighborhood voted and who didn't vote. You know, literally, you know, said, here's four blocks around your house, and there's a dot on every house of somebody who voted. And, you know, your house does or doesn't have the dot, and we will be printing this again after the election so we can see who voted and who didn't. And that, you know, you could call it public shaming, you could call it encouragement, you could call it peer pressure. That's one of the most effective ways to get out the vote. And Republicans did that in Alaska. Democrats did that in Washington, D.C., or in Maryland. And frankly, I think it should be done nationally. I think there should be a website called, you know, myvote.gov or something like that, that takes the data from all the states and presents it both in a graphic and table form, so that not only can you see who voted in your neighborhood, you know, instantly, easily, graphically, but also you can see if your vote was recorded, because we have a serious problem in this country with election fraud. Principally, you know, run by Republicans, where they're challenging votes in many cases after the person has cast their ballot, and people don't even know that their ballot has been challenged, and their vote never gets recorded, and or they get these placebo ballots, these provisional ballots, and their vote never gets recorded. And if we had a national registry where you could just look, you know, a couple of days after the election and see if your vote was recorded, that would drive people to that, and that would have a similar effect, would it not?
Yes, well, part of what I would do as a procedure would be very much as you described, except that would make it simpler. I would threaten that I would paint their driveways red if they didn't.
Yeah, okay. Howard, I admire your guts. Thank you very much for the call. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I think people should stop falsely nitpicking at the Democrats. I mean, zero Democrats are owned by selfish billionaires like the Koch brothers. Virtually all Democrats are trying to create millions more jobs with infrastructure spending, protect women's and LGBT rights. And if it wasn't for the president and the Democrats blocking the Keystone Pipeline, it would already be built and leaking by now.
Yeah.
And that socialist in Seattle, Sharma or whatever her name is,
yeah,
she didn't raise the minimum wage to $15. The Democrats on the council did. She's only one vote. She just took all the credit for it. I've seen her speak three or four times, and she never once mentions anyone but herself. And Obama didn't become less progressive. He became president. That means he can only do what Congress will do, you know. And you know, of course, the Democrats aren't perfect. You know, nobody is.
Yeah.
But all these false statements are only going to get us one thing, and that's President Ayn Rand Paul or President Romney.
Yeah. No, I your point is well taken, Paul. Your point is very well taken, and that's why I'm suggesting that the Democratic Party needs to define their core principles and essentially say to their candidates, are you with us or not? And if you are with us, we will throw everything we have into supporting you as long as this is your message. If you want to go off on your own, if you want to, you know, Mary Landrieu, if you want to go off and be little, you know, Miss Keystone, good luck. But we're going to be supporting the Democrats who are holding to the core values of the Democratic Party.
Well, but Mary Landrieu is good on the rest of the issues. You know, she's for raising minimum wage, infrastructure spending. You know, yeah, she's bad on one issue, but that's one issue. You know?
Yeah, it's there's more than one issue that Mary Landrieu is bad on. But you know, okay, point taken, Paul, and well said. Thank you for the call, Nick in Columbia, Missouri. Hey, Nick, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, I got a few suggestions for my beloved Democratic Party. The first thing is stop being afraid to be called liberal or progressive. Quit
right.
worrying about that. Stop
right.
being afraid.
No, be proud of it.
Wear it with pride. Allison Lundgren Grimes, why are you worried about being shamed for voting for President Obama? You should be proud of that vote. Quit hiding from it. That's stupid. You know, and we had some great candidates that didn't win. People like Michelle Nunn in Georgia, who I thought was a wonderful candidate, ran a great campaign, but she was, you know, climbing up a mountain and almost got there.
Yeah.
You know, people like that. But, you know, so stop being afraid to be called liberal or progressive and you know, stop allowing them to use that to shame you.
Yeah.
But then the other thing we have to do is, you know, when you were talking to Frank earlier, that is a great point to hammer at. This is who you're voting for.
Yeah.
You're voting for $3 billion in refund checks to be given to GE.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, Nick, here is, thanks to the other half of my brain over here, Shane Farnan, here is Jack Kennedy saying just what you're talking about.
What do our opponents mean when they apply to us the label liberal? If by liberal they mean, as they want people to believe, someone who is soft in his policies abroad, who is against local government, and who is unconcerned with the taxpayer's dollar, then the record of this party and its members demonstrate that we are not that kind of liberal. But if by a liberal they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas,
you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Reactions. Someone who cares about the welfare of the people in our policies abroad. If that is what they mean by a liberal, then I'm proud to say that I'm a liberal.
We have to. We're going to play that again because it is so good. It is just so good, and. But in the meantime, Harvey in Berkeley, California. Hey, Harvey, what's up?
Hi, Tom. On your newscast, you talked about the solar electric bicycle path that just opened up in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And that uses solar panels embedded in the bike path, and the bikes roll over the solar panels that have a rugged, textured, strong glass cover. And I have three short suggestions to upgrade the solar electric bike path. Number one, use nano piezoelectric surface on the solar panels, and that would generate electricity from the pressure of the bicycle riding on the surface. Number two, that would be pressure to electricity. Number two, a thermoelectric, that's heat to electricity, a nano thermoelectric substrate under the solar cells, because solar cells are usually brown or black or blue, and they generate a lot of heat, so this would turn the heat to electricity. And number three, go to your favorite search engine and put in inductive charging. It says here, inductive charging, also known as wireless charging, uses an electromagnetic field to transfer energy between two objects. So on a hunch, I put in inductive charging bicycles, and it turned out that bicycles can be inductively charged. So the solar electric bicycle pathway can inductively charge electric bikes. They can either...
yes and no. Here's the problem with inductive charging for bicycles, Harvey. Radiation decays according to what's called the reciprocal of the square law. which means that every time you double the distance, you reduce the amount of radiation by tenfold. So as you know, if you want to charge a bike inductively, if you want to induce an electric field in a conductor that's going to transfer that into the bike's battery, if they're near each other, if they're within inches of each other, you can do that successfully. If it's going to be within feet of each other, which would be necessary for a bicycle, you're going to have a massive electromagnetic field. You're going to have huge losses as a consequence of that. And that massive electromagnetic field would also be very disruptive to electronic devices like your phone in your back pocket.
Well, I thought maybe they can redesign bicycles to take advantage of this, because Holland has 22,000 miles of bike lanes, and I thought if it could work there, it could work here.
Yeah.
So this would be a new form of transportation.
Yeah, you'd have to. I mean, it's not inconceivable that you could redesign bicycle tires so that there was a continuously wound coil around the tires, so that as the tires are rolling across the surface, there's always a part of that of the wheel that has the wire that in which you can induce a current that is, you know, in contact with the road, so it would be within a few sixteenths of an inch of what's generating the electromagnetic field where you're trying to induce the current. That would be a really really interesting area for somebody with an inventor's hat and an EE background, an electrical engineering background, to dig into, and probably somebody already is. But your point that, you know, solar cells absorb heat from the sun because they're dark is a great one. And the piezoelectric, that's old technology. I mean, every time somebody, clicks their BIC, they are literally converting physical, you know, kinetic energy, physical energy, pressure into electricity, through the piezoelectric effect. That little spark that lights that lighter is from a piezoelectric device. You're right. Here, Harvey, thanks for the call. We'll be back with Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service right after this. Tom Hartman here with you. It's 10 minutes before the hour, and let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org, not to mention nurseptsdtoolkit.org. Hey, Ellen.
Well, thank you so much. Okay, there's quite a bit going on, and one, of course, is the president's speech tonight. Networks, so far, we know, are not carrying it. One apparently may change its mind. But let me just say something. You're carried on terrestrial radio as well as cable and the internet and everything else like that. People have a responsibility, these various networks and actually terrestrial radio stations. They have to have a public file that is open between business hours where people can comment, and they have to keep the public airwaves open for this kind of thing. And so them, by them not doing it, they are really, if there's a citizen action, and I know Dr. Tom can get one going, because people's licenses, they should not be able to retain their license. I mean, they've run speeches by former presidents, Bush, Clinton, et cetera. What is going on here?
Yeah, I think what's going on is the networks are all putting money above the civic good. But specifically to your point, the way that somebody can react to this is to write a letter to their local radio station, television station, or both, saying, please put this letter in your public file. I believe that by not running the president's speech live, you are not programming in the public interest, and I will object to your license being renewed.
That's right. And then they should go about a month later or a couple weeks later and see if it is in the public file,
yeah,
which is available to any citizen.
Yeah, this is how you strike fear into the heart of the media. It used to be much more fear. But,
yes, you know, yes, anyway. Absolutely. Okay, so then, of course, in anticipation of what the president is going to be saying tonight, Mitch McConnell got on the floor and he said, to quote the president, democracy is hard. You have to change votes one by one. Except I don't have his voice, of course. Maybe you can do a better imitation.
Mitch McTurtle.
Yes, thank
democracy
you very
is hard.
Excellent, Dr. Tom. Okay, so it looks as if He then said he compared the immigration bill of the president to Obamacare. He said it's not reform, just like Obamacare. Didn't really change people's monthly payments. They went up. This is what's going to happen under immigration. I don't see how you compare the two, but okay, I guess he did.
This was Ted Cruz's thing, wasn't it? This is Obamacare for... No, that was net neutrality.
Obamacare, right, yeah, yeah, right, exactly. And then he said, and then Mitch McConnell said that he rebukes his own view of democracy, and meaning the president. He also said that Congress is going to act when they get back. Well, okay, the House can act. They certainly haven't acted in 510 or 11 days, but they can act. It's true, they can. And then where are they going to get the 60 votes that they need in the Senate?
Right.
They're not going to get them. Now, they can try and do a rule change, but that would not be a happy situation.
Yeah.
So then the Democrats talked, and actually Nancy Pelosi also gave a press conference today. And Harry Reid said the president's decision is not a political victory. It's a victory for families. He said we can't sit idly by waiting for Republicans to act while homes are being broken up across this nation. It was so obvious that he was going to do something, said Senator Reid. Now, what's interesting is I was there the day that Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. And at the same time, they had a Dreamer Act. And these the bill tonight, the president, well, not the bill, what the president's talking about is executive action, does not address Dreamers. And I remember that the Democrats put a picture of a man who had just graduated from NYU dental school, who was not legally here in the United States. This is the kind of people that they're talking about. I mean, they're not talking about talented people keeping out. They're just talking about blanket no.
Right.
That's what the Republicans are doing.
That's amazing. You know, for that matter, if John Boehner really wanted to do something, he could just bring the bill that passed the Senate with 68 votes, a bipartisan comprehensive immigration.
And it would pass in the House.
Yeah, he could put it on the floor of the House for a vote. He just
refuses
his own people to vote for it.
Exactly. And nobody's calling them on this.
Yeah, well,
I mean, we are, but I'm yeah. saying no one, none of
right.
their own party are calling
I'm astonished that the media doesn't talk about this every day. Another day goes by. You know, it's been, how many days has it been since John Boehner blocked long-term unemployment benefits? I mean, that was 3 days after Christmas last year. Every single day, he could bring that to that passed the Senate also bipartisan.
Right.
He could bring that to the floor of the House and have a vote
and,
for it.
And, I, you know, they talk about the media giving President Obama a free pass. They're giving the Republican House a free pass.
Oh, it's insane. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Okay, back to more of the presser that was held today. Senator Schumer said rather than choosing to throw a temper tantrum and shut down the government hurting millions of middle-class families, Republicans should channel their anger in productive action to pass the bipartisan bill now.
Hmm.
That's what Chuck Schumer says. Dick Durbin said it's a first step. We have a responsibility to do something in Congress, but until we do, the president is doing the right thing for America.
Yeah.
So that is on that front. Now, there is something else which I think is pretty interesting. Well, there's a couple things. One is the Senate Commerce Committee today had a hearing about airbags.
Mm.
And apparently there are not enough, you know, that these airbags come out and then they hurt people.
Right.
And what they're saying is that they are lacking replacement parts for 30 million airbags.
Right.
So do they tell people not to be in the passenger seat? That's one of the questions that came up. One of the people from the hearing was the National Highway Traffic Administration. He said 100 people per day are killed on the highways. And this is accounting for airbags, drunk driving, texting, et cetera. 2,000 people a day are injured.
Wow.
And there has been nothing done on this airbag situation to really address this.
Do they have some sort of immunity from liability? I would think that, you know, lawyers would be all over this thing.
I would think lawyers are, too, and they must have some. I have not looked into it, but my guess is there's some limit to their liability.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, particularly if they don't declare it totally unsafe, then how do you?
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. That's a question for like somebody like Mike Papadopoulos. I'll have to run that by him next time I talk to him. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and 3-don.org and still plugging nurseptsdtoolkit.org.
You don't have to have
okay.
it today. That's okay,
yeah,
but it's
right.
a great little thing.
There you go. Okay, thank you very much, Ellen Ratner. Great having you with us.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live. Radio, commercial radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, and Pacifica stations all across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio and every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television on Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable systems nationwide by the Free Speech TV television network. So pleased to be with you. And Arturo Carmona is with us. He is the executive director of Presente.org, P-R-E-S-E-N-T-E.org. Arturo, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. And tell us, first of all, about Presente.
Well, we're the largest Latino online engagement organization in the nation, and we're an organization that's proud to take on Progressive Caucus. And now, the last couple of years, we've found ourselves not only targeting Republicans, but interestingly enough, we had to go after a lot of Democrats that weren't the best on our issues. So we're certainly nonpartisan, and we take on the most important issues impacting Latino families in the U.S.
And that most important issue right now is immigration reform, is it not?
Absolutely. Immigration is a defining issue for Latino families and Latino communities. It's an issue that has devastated our communities with unprecedented level of deportation, and it has really unified our community around just and fair immigration policy. And so it certainly has been a difficult period, and we're very excited about the announcement today.
Yeah. Now, President Obama is going to make an announcement tonight at 8 o'clock. My understanding is that the big four networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox, have all chosen not to carry it, not to preempt their programming. It's going to be a nice, tight 10-minute presentation. He designed it to be television-friendly, but they're not going to do it. The cable networks, however, will carry it, CNN, Fox News, and MSNBC, and Telemundo and Univision are both going to carry it live. So, you know, people can watch it. I'm curious your thoughts, A, on this decision by the big networks, and B, on what you think he's going to say and where you'd like to see him go with this.
Well, you know, I think on the network thing, I got to say it should be ashamed of themselves. You know, when George W. Bush made a similar speech when it came to taking National Guard to the border, you know, much lesser degree, in my opinion, in terms of breadth, all these networks, you know, were there to pony up their time. And so why not for this major announcement that the president is about to make? Doesn't make any sense. And frankly, as a Latino, I'm offended that they're not really putting this up there.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost a slap in the face. It's really remarkable. What's your I'm guessing you have a much better line to the inside skinny on what's going to be said tonight and exactly what the president's going to do than I do. What do you know, or what do you believe about what's going to be said and what the president is going to be doing when he actually signs his executive order tomorrow in Las Vegas?
Yeah, let me tell you what I know and what we're a little concerned about, because we're not entirely sure. We know that he's going to say that he's going to cover through a deferred action type of arrangement, covering up to, you know, 1 to 3 million parents of U.S. citizen children. We know that those parents are going to be covered. Now, what we don't know is whether he's going to cover the children of Dreamers. We don't know if he's going to curtail back the failed secure communities policy that over 300 cities and municipalities have rejected across the country. Most of the major metropolitan cities in America have rejected those policies. We don't know if he's going to begin to draw back on that, as we had heard. Now, and we don't know about some of the rumored militarization policies on the border and cracking down on the border. So we were a little concerned about how those were going to look like, and we're still waiting to see what will happen. What we do know is that this is a major victory for the grassroots community. This is a major victory for those outside the Beltway that believe that we could hold the Democratic Party and that we could hold the president accountable to a lot of his promises, and that this is, should not be characterized as an insider victory. This was done through the fearless activism of immigrants, undocumented families, and their leaders, and we're very proud of that.
Yeah, I was so impressed and continue to be, over the last couple of years, with so many people who came forward and said, here's who I am, here is my name, I stand here without documentation. I mean, literally risking arrest and deportation to putting their lives on the line to work, and I'm guessing probably some of them were badly punished for this, to work toward this moment.
Absolutely. You know, you saw, when you see that the type of separation of families that we've seen over the last few years and the type of, you know, real destruction in immigrant life, you know, we're not surprised. People laid everything on the line. Organizations put everything on the line. And it wasn't an insider D.C. Beltway action. It was those groups outside of D.C. And so it was a very inspiring moment for a progressive cause. When we said, hey, we need to hold Democrats, the president, accountable to what they profess to represent and not continue to throw immigrants under the bus, as they've done, really, cycle after cycle for the last 6 to 8 years.
Yeah. Now, what we're hearing on Fox News, on right-wing talk radio, it's being reported on CNN and MSNBC and whatnot, but it's being, you know, really pushed by the right-wing media, is that President Obama has now gone from being the president of the United States to an emperor, to a czar, to a king. And the picture at the top, a drudge of him wearing a gold crown, that he's exceeded his authority, that what he's doing is illegal, that it's unconstitutional. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's tough for me not to laugh at those arguments when the previous two major immigration executive orders came out of Republicans and covered proportionately the almost exact amount of people proportionate to the undocumented population, about 40%. It's rhetoric. It's political speech. And frankly, it's a declaration of a war against Latinos and our immigrant families and brothers and sisters. It's saying that this the Republican Party is really out of touch. And it's saying that, you know, as this country continues to diversify and become more African-American, more Latino, younger, more Asian, and as people of color continue to emerge as important players in this country, they're basically saying, hey, we don't care. We don't give a rat about you and your people and your families and your future. And that will not be forgotten. And so this hope that they had to rekindle relationships with communities of color is really being thrown away, it's to their detriment.
Yeah. Republicans in the, I believe it's the House of Representatives, just announced their new leadership slate, 14 old white guys. surprise, surprise, right? We're talking with Arturo Carmona, the executive director of Presente, presente.org. And Arturo, we have a little less than a minute left. What can people do to support Presente, to support this president in this action and to push for more?
Well, we need to speak up. We need to write letters to the editor. People can join Placenta.org by going to our website, placenta.org, and really say that this is an important step forward, but by no means is the job done. And we need to push back on the right wing and xenophobic rhetoric of Republicans. But we need to capture this for what it is. You know, it's an important step forward. It's going to cover 4 to 5 million undocumented immigrants. 6 million undocumented immigrants will be left out of this package. Deportations will continue. Immigrant families will continue to be divided and separated because our immigration system is closed.
Yeah.
Taking no merits away from what we have. Let's look forward.
Arturo, we're going to hit a break here. Thank you so much. Hang on,
thank you, Tom.
Just a second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
He always steps on me. Arturo Carmona, the executive director of Presente.org, Presente.org. Thank you, Arturo.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Yep. Welcome back. Kevin, in Long Beach, California, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Kevin, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Great show.
Thank you.
Just before I state what I wanted to state, but somebody talked about using the fear on our side, the Democrat. Mm-hmm. And really, it's not fear. It's actually the truth. I mean, they want to destroy Social Security. They don't want minimum wage. They don't want health care. So it's really not fear. It's just the actual truth. And if it sounds fearful, well, then I guess it is. But really what I called up for was, I think when Ted Kennedy passed away, I think we really lost the message. I mean, he was really the lion of the Senate, and really he just wouldn't back down from anybody.
Yeah.
And we haven't had anybody step up and to replace that man. And I just think he is just sorely missed to this day, because like I said, he was not afraid of bare knuckle politics, and I don't see anybody up there stepping in and filling his shoes.
Yeah. Occasionally somebody will get cranked up. Bernie does a pretty good job of this. Elizabeth Warren just went off after President Obama for for proposing another bankster as one of his senior advisors. But just so people know what you're talking about, Kevin, here's a little clip of Ted Kennedy on the floor of the Senate talking about raising the minimum wage and taking on the Republicans for refusing to have that conversation. Here he is.
$240 billion in tax breaks for corporations, $36 billion in tax breaks for small businesses, increase in productivity, 42% over the last 10 years. But do you think there's any increase in the minimum wage? No. What is the price? We ask the other side. What is the price that you want from these working men and women? What cost? How much more do we have to give to the private sector and to business? How many billion dollars more are you asking? Are you requiring? When does the greed stop?
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And what you played on right before, President Kennedy.
Yeah, I'm going to play that again in about 3 minutes, the Jack Kennedy clip.
But I am a big supporter of both Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. I think they're going in the right direction. But
And Sherrod Brown can get pretty cranked up, too. He doesn't get as much press coverage, but he can give a hell of a speech.
Exactly. But Kennedy's name just means so much to this country and stuff. And I just...
Yeah.
You know, I think we're just...
Yeah, it's so sad to see one of his... I don't know if it's one of his kids or one of his nephews who's leading this anti-pot legalization thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think it's Patrick. He had a drug problem himself, and so he's just assuming everybody's going to have drug problems or whatever, and therefore we need to criminalize pot and keep all these people in prison. And it just... It's unfortunate.
I bet your father wouldn't think that way.
No, I don't think so. And I'm not sure whose kid he is. I'd have to go back and pardon. Yeah. Shane thinks he's Ted's son.
Kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's what's really tragic is that the fathers of all of them, you know, Bobby Kennedy's dad was assassinated. Ted died from brain cancer. Jack was assassinated. But that generation is gone. And that generation was so wise. They had so much wisdom. Kevin, thank you for the call. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, we got, let's try playing Jack Kennedy again. This is Jack Kennedy in its entirety. Well, not the whole speech. I mean, it was part of a much longer speech that he gave to the Liberal Party in New York City, in New York State. In New York State, they have fusion voting. So you can have, you can be on the ticket with multiple parties. And the Liberal Party in 1960 endorsed Jack Kennedy, and he gave a speech to them, thanking them for their endorsement, and this is what he had to say about being a liberal.
What do our opponents mean when they apply to us the label liberal? If by liberal they mean, as they want people to believe, someone who is soft in his policies abroad, who is against local government, and who is unconcerned with the taxpayer's dollar, then the record of this party and its members demonstrate that we are not that kind of liberal. But if by a liberal they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reactions, someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights and their civil liberties, someone who believes that we can break through the stalemate and suspicions that grip us in our policies abroad, if that is what they mean by a liberal, then I'm proud to say that I'm a liberal.
I am proud to say that I'm a liberal. This is just core principles. Democratic Party messaging. The Democratic Party needs to, you know, as Howard Dean said, you know, he said, I'm here to represent the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. And there's a bunch of good people out there representing the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. And I'm also very proud that the president tonight is taking on this whole right wing crazy train. It's a machine. And he's taking them on. He's right to their faces. And the big television networks, which are all owned by large transnational corporations, they're going, no, we're not going to carry it. Really? Jordan in Winthrop Harbor, Illinois. Hey, Jordan, you wanted to talk about corporate taxes?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to mention to you that the thing that's missing in the conversation is that the biggest investors in corporations are pension funds. So if you tax corporations, you're really just taxing working people.
No, Jordan, I'm not buying it. The biggest investors in corporations are not pension funds. Look at the churn that's happening on Wall Street every day. Nice Republican talking point. Nice try. B, having corporations pay taxes so that we can have a decent infrastructure, so that our country can work, so that we can have schools that actually educate our kids, so we can go back pre-Reaganomics to free college education, so that our water systems, our septic systems, our roads, all these things work, having corporations pay their fair share, it's going to increase the value of your retirement, not decrease it. Raising corporate taxes is not going to hurt your 401k. And beyond that, we shouldn't be having 401ks to begin with. That's a whole different argument. But say that again. He said pensions? Oh, yeah. Pensions are defined benefit programs. I mean, you're not going to have anything, you know, pensions are not. Come on. It's nice try. But Paul in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hi. I wanted to talk to you about Reaganomics because you usually talk about it every day. You just mentioned it again now.
Yeah.
But before I do, first time I'm calling you, and I wanted to say that you're the best commentator, but I'm not going to say that because you won't accept it, but I don't know any better commentator than you.
Thank you, Pat.
So let's get back to Mr. Reagan.
Yes.
I'm sure you've heard his 48 Truman speech that he made on radio.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, we've got the clip of it. I can play it if you'd like.
Okay.
It's going to take Shane a second to dig it out, but
all right.
Yeah, it's 48 seconds. Well, we've got the time, don't we, Shane? Yeah. Here is Ronald Reagan campaigning for Harry Truman and I think Hubert Humphrey. Here it is.
Labor has been handcuffed by the vicious Taft-Hartley law. Social Security benefits have been snatched away from almost a million workers by the Gearhart bill. Fair employment practices, which had worked so well during wartime, have been abandoned. Veterans' pleas for low-cost homes have been ignored, and many people are still living in made-over chicken coops and garages. Tax reduction bills have been passed to benefit the higher income brackets alone. The average worker saved only $1.73 a week. In the false name of economy, millions of children have been deprived of milk once provided through the federal school lunch program. This was the payoff of the Republicans' promises. And this is why we must have new faces in the Congress of the United States, Democratic faces. This is why we must elect not only President Truman, but also men like Mayor Hubert Humphrey of Minneapolis, the Democratic candidate for senator from Minnesota.
There you go, Paul. That was before he married Nancy Davis, and her father said, hey, Ronnie, you want to get rich?
Yeah, loyal Davis, yeah. And I believe in his heart he was really a Democrat, and just to stay popular, and he switched his tune.
Yeah.
And I think when we use the term Reaganomics, we're attributed all these policies to him when they're really Republican policies, you know, GOP-nomics,
yeah,
which they're still using today. And to stress, you know, that point is what I'm trying to get across to you.
So Republican-nomics, yeah, because Reagan's dead. I mean, people, on the other hand, Reagan, as President Obama said a few months ago, Ronald Reagan was one of the most consequential presidents of his lifetime, of my lifetime, because he actually changed America in a very, very significant way. Changed it for the worse, but changed it. And we need to repudiate, I say Reaganomics, you say Republicanomics, it's I think we're both right. We need to repudiate that. We need to say this experiment failed. It failed in Kansas, you know, Sam Brownback, you know, doubled down on it and totally, you know, screwed his state up. And it failed nationwide. Thank you, Paul, for the call. Thank you for the suggestion. We'll be back with more of your thoughts and my thoughts and the news of the day in just a moment. Stick around. It's 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
If you could advise Debbie Wasserman Schultz on how the Democrats should campaign, what would you say? Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you, and welcome back. As I am carefully editing my daily take here during the breaks. By the way, Sue over in our chat room notes Patrick Kennedy, the guy who's campaigning against pot decriminalization. It was Ted's son. Our guess was right. So, sad, but true. Anyhow, Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
I'd like to make what I think are really giant points today about what the Democrats can do. First of all, I really want to attack the myth of the middle. There are over a third of the populace is unaffiliated in this country. They are not between the Republican and Democratic parties. Most of the ones I know are far, well, I don't even like that linear thing of left and right. It's all a great sphere of, you know, different views. And they're outside of the views of the main parties, not between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is we need to make the voting machines, bring the voting machines thing back, make that a front and center, because the votes are not being counted correctly. I would say the situation is worse than it was in 2000, but that smooth elections are not accurate elections.
We were ranked, yeah. We were just ranked as the 26th nation in the world in terms of the quality of our electoral process. With a bunch of guys like Mauritania above us. I mean, little countries that have more transparent election processes than ours. And a large part of it was how hard it is to register to vote and how hard it is to vote.
Yeah, and it's all
and the security to vote.
About it. Yeah, so I mean, every aspect of the situation needs to be addressed, not these bandaged things. And it's actually just been dropped. Democrats are afraid to bring it up because they say, well, people aren't going to vote. I say, well, so what? If they vote, they're still not being counted right. So it doesn't matter either way. You've got to get accurate voting.
Right.
And who isn't for accurate voting? So it's a, you know, broad-based issue.
Yeah.
Next one is stand for things. Don't be a fraidy-crat. Don't run on fear. I mean, and, you know, so many Democrats are afraid to mention things because they're afraid they're going to make somebody mad who is actually probably already mad at them and won't vote for them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to define and not be defined. You've got to take command of the message. Because if you look at right now, even people who are well within the party who've been speaking Democrats for years are now misusing the term Democrat rather than saying Democratic.
Right.
Even they have been contaminated by this. So, you know, take control of the language. And I was just speaking with a former Democratic operative. She had worked in some pretty big things. And this election, she just couldn't see the Democrats had any problems. It was all the voters she was blaming. And it's like, no, you've got to get rid of these consultants. You've got to get people who are fresh. I mean, it's amazing how the Democrats keep on hiring the same consultants that that keep on losing.
Right.
And, you know, Al Gore was a great example of, you know, being destroyed by the consultants.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you got to go for broke. If you look at, again, like with Eric Cantor, he outspent his opponent 40-1. But because the guy had a strong message, he stood for something, even though I would disagree that he stood for. Even though that being outspent by 41, he blew Eric Cantor out of the water.
Yes.
Yeah, when you stand for something, you win.
Yep. Yep.
And just last thing about the Democrats, there's a great quote by Maya Angelou. It says, there's a world difference between truth and facts. Facts can obscure truth. So I know a lot of Democrats, a lot of consultants who have knowledge, but they don't have understanding. So they may have the facts, but they don't know the truth.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Jeff, thank you for that. Thank you for the call, and thanks for the Maya Angelou quote. Bob in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Bob, thanks for listening to 880 AM. What's on your mind today?
Thanks for having me on, Thomas. Great show. Presidential legal authority, something that is a Senate report 93-549. In 1973, they tried to figure out how come President Nixon was extending his war powers into Vietnam and Cambodia. And what they found out is that we've been under the national state of emergency since March 9th, 1933, and it has never been rescinded. So it's my fervent desire that people engage in a discourse across party lines that will address the four most important issues facing this nation. It is the suspension of the Constitution under the 30 state of national emergency, the unlawful monetary system that we have in the United States, the Fed, and then the subsequent creation under FDR of administrative law, which is ruled by agency. We've been hijacked. We have no grand jury. Federal state and office of the DA and the police state in which we live under has taken our lawful government that the Republican state, the founders, base this nation on, and I hear these dubious arguments constantly on the media, no matter where I go.
Yeah, Bob, I think you've called the wrong show. You want the Alex Jones show. Thanks a lot for the call. Ray in McHenry, Illinois. Hey, Ray, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. There's that old saying about the chain's only as strong as its weakest link, and everybody's come up with great ideas today, but I just finished one of my many trips I make every year across the country. I go from Chicago all the way down to almost L.A., southern Nevada. And when I do that, as soon as I leave Chicago, I always scan the radio dial. There's never anything on from a progressive station. I think there's one little station left in Aspen that's really hard to find on a dial. You can't have an entire country being brainwashed every day, 24/7. With the kind of stuff that's out there, the misinformation, the lies, the reframing that's going on. And they're so good at it, too. People like Limbaugh and Beck, they're just so darn good at it. They impress me just how good they are. You can't have that. The Democrats are never going to get anywhere unless they find a way to combat that, either to dismantle that propaganda machine in some way, but I don't see that happening with Republican Congress, or to come back with something competing with that, even if it means putting their money into a radio station and TV stations.
Well, progressives tried this with Air America, and I think the biggest sin of the Air America experiment, when you consider that Fox News lost $100 million a year for about 5 years, the losses declined over those 5 years, but it was 5 years before they made their first penny. Sean Hannity lost hundreds of millions of dollars for them before they made anything. And Air America lost, what, $15 million, roughly, in 6 years? Their biggest sin was that they were underfunded, A. But B, if you want to actually see a change in the media landscape in the United States, and this could be done tomorrow by the President of the United States, all he would have to do is direct the Department of Justice to begin, I believe it's the Department of Justice, it might be the Commerce Department, to begin enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act with regard to the media, to change the rules for media ownership. How many radio stations, how many television stations an individual corporation can own or an individual can own, and where the owners have to live. And go back to, you know, my father's era, when radio stations could not also own television stations, could not also owners could not also own newspapers, and they had to live in the community. And go back to, I mean, when I started in radio in the late 60s in Lansing, Michigan, every single station in town was owned by a local family or a couple of local families. I mean, it was it was entirely local ownership. Now, I haven't done a survey of each one of the stations, but I know that many of the stations in Lansing are owned by, you know, the two big corporations that own most of the radio stations in this country. So if we were to go back to local ownership, then you would have, you know, people who have an investment. In fact, you look at WDEV in Vermont. It's one of the best stations in the country. I mean, The Atlantic did an amazing story about this a couple of years ago. Ken Squire owns the station. It's a family-owned station. His father started it in the 1930s. And he's got an hour of a Republican, and he's got an hour of a Democrat. In fact, he has Anthony Polina on. He's for the Progressive Party, and, you know, does an hour show. He mixes it all up. It's programming in the public interest. So, you know, I think that's I've been saying this to I've had this conversation with probably five or six Democratic senators and maybe twice that many members of the House of Representatives. Over the last 6 or 8 years, they'll say, you know, what can we do about the media? And my answer is always start enforcing the Sherman Act, and they just kind of shrug their shoulders and walk away because nobody thinks it can be done. It can easily be done, but that's my solution. Ray, thank you for the call. Joe in Vienna, Virginia. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Oh, hi. Yeah, thanks for the call. My point is initially on the amnesty that Obama's going to be granting tonight, or trying to, and although I'm pretty much for...
Can you define amnesty, Joe?
I'm pretty much for, extending a path to citizenship along the lines of the Senate bill. I think, liberals will rue the day and how they've let Obama get by with everything that he's gotten by with as far as overruling Congress or bypassing him. I mean,
why didn't Ronald Reagan rue the day when he did essentially the exact same thing?
Well, I see you got the Democratic talking points for the day. Well, let me.
No, it's a fact. It's a fact. And George Herbert Walker Bush, you know, signed an executive order that did the same thing for 1.5 million, for 40% of the undocumented population of the United States, the same proportion.
Are you going to let me explain the difference?
Yeah, go for it.
Are you going to let me? Okay, well, stop interrupting. The difference between what Reagan and Bush did is what they did was similar to what Obama did with his executive orders on the ACA. What their executive orders dealt with the implementation of a bill that was passed in 1986, which was intended by Congress to give amnesty. And both of those executive orders by Reagan and Bush one dealt with the procedures and everything.
You're right, Joe. You're right. And what Obama is facing is a piece of legislation that was passed in the United States Senate with 68 votes, with Republicans as well as Democrats. And John Boehner knows if he allows there to be a vote in the House of Representatives, it will pass. Republicans and Democrats will vote for it, and he's refusing to bring it to a vote. So you've got a president now who's facing the caucus room conspiracy, absolute obstruction.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And that's why what he is doing is even more important and more consequential and better than what Reagan and Bush did. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's see. Alan, watching Free Speech TV in Pierpont, Ohio. Hey, Alan, you wanted to talk about Chris Craddock? Texas Railroad Commissioner?
I understand that Ms. Craddock says that she's going to permit, despite what the people in Denton, Texas have to say. The reason she's doing that is because of the permitting process, as it was in Ohio with our Division of Oil and Gas. That's where they got their finances from, was from the permitting process and regulating the oil and gas industry. So they were pretty much hand in hand. had to permit in order to continue the flow of money into their division. And that's where Ms. Craddock is standing.
Respectfully, I would say Ms. Craddock is just a shill for the gas and oil industry, as are most Republicans in Texas.
Well, yes, that's true. And I would also want to say, anyone in Texas that's listening, stand strong with the citizens of Denton, Texas.
Yeah, yeah. There should.
One other thing, I saw your interview with Great Minds with Phil Donahue.
Mm-hmm.
Please replay that. It was the best thing I've seen in decades. Thank you very much, Tom.
Sure, it's on YouTube. I haven't put it up on conversationswithgreatminds.com yet. I need to do that this afternoon or tonight. Now that it's on YouTube, but it's at youtube.com/. The Big Picture RT, so you can check that out over there. Coach Glenn in State College, Pennsylvania. Hey, Glenn, how you doing?
Hi, Tom. You know, the first hour you were talking about what can we do to fix the problem with Congress, and I think trying to go for a constitutional amendment to get the money out is a great goal, but maybe go with baby steps and force, like, I think the image that came to mind was play 52-card pickup, where you throw it all up in the air and redistrict everything based the way some of those states do on a fair basis, with ignoring who is in those districts. And that would give you a more balanced Congress, so they wouldn't be going to the black and white extremes of each side, and maybe they could get something done.
Yeah, I saw you mention that in the chat room, and you know, I was nodding my head. Here's the problem. Redistricting is in the Constitution. It is run by the individual states. That's in the Constitution. If you want to change the rules for redistricting nationally, you would have to enact legislation or a constitutional amendment. If you want to do it on a state-by-state basis, you can. And California did. They did it brilliantly. They have a nonpartisan redistricting commission that whose goal is to come up with legislative districts that are, you know, as close to a polygon as possible, you know, equal sides and all that kind of thing. And the consequence of that has been that the Democrats have taken the legislature in California. On the other hand, you've got states like Michigan, you know, Wisconsin, places like that, where they've redistricted. They redistricted after the 2010 census, and the Republicans were in control of the process. And so and it's happening all across the South. As I started the show out talking with what Charles Blow is writing about in today's New York Times, they're doing it where they're basically creating Democratic-only districts and Republican-only districts, safe seats, but also trying to basically racially gerrymander it. I don't know how you're going to do it in those states. Do you, Glenn?
Well, you know, I was watching Rachel Maddow last night, and she listed the six things Americans want the most,
right.
And those are six things the Republicans are all against, and yet people vote for them.
Yeah, well, there is that. I didn't see her show last night, so I can't speak to it, but... I could come up with a long list of things that Americans want that Republicans are opposed to. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 10 minutes before the hour. And Jennifer in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Jennifer, you have some advice for the Democrats?
Hello, Tom. Yeah, I just had one comment. But the caller right before the last one took all of my thunder, but everything he said was exactly what I wanted to say about the media, that we only have 10% of the media, and the progressives need to, you know, take over 90% of the media. But it is time. Your suggestion was perfect in that we need to get the president to enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act. How do we get him to do that? We get every single progressive organization, social, environmental, every one of them to drop everything they're doing, and that's what they focus on.
Right.
Because without it, there's no way anything is going to go anywhere. And I have felt this way for 10 years.
So I think most Americans feel that way, Jennifer. I think they, particularly anybody old enough to remember what America was like before Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, back when... You know, strip malls and city centers were filled with small, locally owned businesses, and now they're not. Now it's, you know, a handful of giant conglomerates operating under maybe about 100 different brand names, but it's really just 10 or 12 corporations own the vast majority of all retail in America, and that's just retail. You could do it sector by sector. You could do every sector, and I'm talking about you and I are right now talking about in the media sector. Yeah.
Right, but if we get the media, we got it. And there's no reason why we can't, why we are at 10%.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not, frankly, it's not even 10%. It's probably closer to one or 2%. But, I'm with you, Jennifer. Thank you for the call. Very well said. Dan in Simpsonville, South Carolina. Hey, Dan, you want to talk about immigration?
Well, yeah, I just want to follow up on you're talking about all this media stuff and changing the radios, you know, the stations to half Democrat, half Republican.
No, I'm not. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying that the two corporations who control most of the largest radio stations in America are fairly overtly conservative and politically active. And
yeah, I would agree with that.
And that's not unique to the media. That is the nature of most large corporations. And whereas small local corporations tend to be more reflective of the community values, they may not be democratic, they may not be progressive, but they reflect the diversity in a community. We are not a red and blue state nation or a red and blue community nation. We're purple. There's no place you can go in the United States and not find liberal Democrats and conservative Republicans. Or even people beyond the party labels. And if businesses were locally owned, if media was locally owned, that diversity would return to our media landscape, in my opinion.
Well, you know,
and the evidence of it. I mean, some of the best stations that I'm on right now that people are hearing me on are on a locally owned station in Minneapolis, a locally owned station in Chicago. There's a bunch of them around the country that are carrying this show, and it's a great thing. We need more of that.
Well, I'm a conservative. I listen to your show. I listen to Michael after yours, and my suggestion for the Democratic Party is to listen to more conservatives talk, because then you might get the full story.
I don't disagree
with what you say, but I enjoy listening to you because your interpretation of what's going on and my interpretation of what's going on are so different, but at least I get a full grasp of everything. I don't think a lot of your listeners do.
May well be. I mean, you know, when Louise and I lived in Portland, I don't own a car anymore, but when we lived in Portland, after I got off the air, we would typically drive down to Oregon City and have lunch, and it's about a half-hour drive, and we would do it just to listen to Michael Savage. I enjoyed listening to Michael Savage. I think he's a very, very good entertainer. He does radio brilliantly. I totally disagree with everything he says. But much of what he says. But he does a great job. And I think that listening to diverse opinions is a good thing. Problem is, in 95%, geographically in 95% of America, and probably population-wise in more than 80% of America, most Americans can't hear a progressive voice. They only hear Michael Savage.
Well, the counter to that is when you get home and you turn on the TV, about 95% of that is a liberal or progressive voice.
I don't think so.
When you open a newspaper, I mean, a lot of the newspapers are similar. So a lot of your listeners are just talking about radio, and I completely agree with the radio thing. I'm down here in South Carolina. I can't even – if I didn't have Sirius Radio, I couldn't listen to your show.
Right. Well, that's the thing in South Carolina. But I would say in the television landscape, I mean, the big three networks tonight are not going to carry the president's speech because it won't make them money. I mean, you know, it's the bottom line. And frankly, I think there should be some element of community service in broadcasting.
Well, I agree with you. I appreciate you taking my call, even though I'm on the other side.
Hey, Dan, next time you call, you know, tell Danielle that you are on the other side, and you'll go to the top of the list. I always take opposing points of view first. Thank you, Dan, for the call. Jamie in Bernalillo, New Mexico. Hey, Jamie, you've got some suggestions for the Democrats. Thanks for listening to 1350 AM, by the way.
Hi, Tom. Yes. First of all, just some quick ones. And a lot of people have said a lot of really good things, some of which I had thought about. But just being very superficial, I would say, first of all, bring back the Democratic donkey and use that as a PR thing for how it was originally used, as the donkey's strength and determination, and use it and lay out things the party's going to do.
Right.
Bring back the strong red, white, and blue coloring. That strikes a chord with people. And the pale little blue thing they use now just doesn't work. And I noticed locally the ads for the Republicans had very strong red, white, and blue, often the flag, but also just in their color scheme.
So you're saying the Democrats basically need to talk to a brand consultant.
Just as a first thing.
Yeah.
And don't let them use Democrat when they should use Democratic. Even our local public television station does that, and it drives me crazy.
Yeah, me too, because there is no such thing as a Democrat party. It's that was who is the senator? Have you no shame, sir? Yeah, that was Joe McCarthy's thing. Joe McCarthy came up with this idea. Call them the Democrat Party and make it sound like rat. And I'm sorry, Thomas Jefferson named it. It's the Democratic Party. Thank you, Jamie. Well said. And thanks for being with us today. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We will see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.